What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 26 of Value Town. I'm your host, Chanman V. Joining me as always, wow, I can do the intro twice. Joining me as always is Trump, my co-host each and every week. He's got his fan out today. And joining us again is our guest, Ray Nod, here to talk about The Hunter again. Like, we're having you back on the show to talk about Hunter. It's kind of crazy that it worked out that way. But how you guys doing today?
Good.
Awesome. Trump, how you doing, man? All right. Thumbs up. Like it. So today, guys, topics are going to be the big announcement with Noxramas Adventure Mode new cards. We'll talk about each of those announcements. And then iPad in the U.S. and Europe now, joining Australia and New Zealand in the very first launch. And we're going to end things with a Hunter discussion. Hunter kind of back in the... it's been in the metagame for a while now, but a different Hunter's in the metagame, and there's kind of two different types of decks. We'll definitely compare them, talk about why the changes, and all that good stuff that we always do. Lastly, Q&A. You guys, as always, post stuff in the Reddit thread in the comments, upvote them, and we will, we will ask the top voted questions in the thread. We'll also be taking some sub questions too. Just get some love from the subs too. But yeah, let's start off with the big announcement at PAX. I actually missed it. I got there like 30 minutes, an hour right after. And I know, Raynaud, you kind of came in around the same time too. But
yeah, I got there like
yeah,
after
exactly.
Everything closed
on that Friday. But yeah, so they announced it at the booth. They announced that Adventure Mode is coming out. 30 new cards are coming out. And they kind of talked a little bit about just, I guess, how they were going to do Adventure Mode. I think it's going to come out in five phases, five wings, I guess, that exactly how they're describing it. And yeah, I'm kind of want to get your thoughts on what you think of all these announcements. Trump, what do you think, man?
I like the way they're doing it. It makes it feel like new content is released like over the entire course of a month. So like there's always something new going on. I really like that direction, and it's a cool theme. It's all tied together very nicely, so yay.
Yeah, definitely. Renan, what do you think, man?
Finally.
Finally, okay.
A year with the same, it's amazing how deep the game was with so few cards, but I'm really happy to finally have some new stuff. And, I hope they use this as an opportunity to... I don't know, just kind of shake stuff up. I really hope Priest gets a buff and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, this is supposed to be set to come out in the summer. They just kind of generalized and said the summer. I'm hoping it's like in June, but it's kind of cool that they're going to be doing this. I mean, they launched the thing in March, right? And now they're going to be doing something new 3 months later. So I kind of like the turnaround. You don't really usually see this kind of turnaround from Blizzard. So 3 months, that's pretty cool. And like you said, Trump, hopefully it's going to be a lot more changes like this in I guess, more frequent cycles. But let's talk about some of the cards. So I'm kind of, I was talking to some of the devs, and we are going to have some devs on next week, guys. So this week was kind of crazy with the iPad launch and just coming back from PAX. So couldn't get them on, couldn't get them scheduled in time. But next week, for sure, we're going to have a pretty decently long interview with one of the devs, so look forward to definitely tune in for that next week. But one of the things that they said when I talked to them was that this is going to be the mechanism for them to launch new cards, this kind of adventure mode, which is kind of cool. It's like a very creative way to do it. But let's talk about some of the new cards that they show. There's going to be 30, but they kind of previewed five of them just for us to take a look at. And I'm going to start out with the Undertaker here. What do you think about this card? And maybe what do you think of it like changing and or how it might be used in some of the archetypes that we know of right now? I'll start out with Trump. Why don't you take it this one? We'll just kind of go in order that way.
Okay. This is one of the cards which could spawn a new archetype. Mm-hmm. I don't think it fits into any of the archetypes as is right now. Mm-hmm. It's not something you can just throw in anything. You put it in a deck with a lot of death rattles in it and it can be really good. That's about all to say about it, I think.
I think it's going to be a card that gets to be a ridiculous size, though.
Can be, if you build a deck around it.
Think so? Renan, what do you think?
Okay. So, my answer is kind of the same for any card that's playable at all. as it gets released. There's this strategy that's like fundamentally broken in Hearthstone, and it's just Warlock, because that hero power lets you like break so many, like one huge fundamental rule of card games where you don't run out of resources, at least that resource of cards. And basically a deck like Zoo is going to benefit more from new cards being released, like almost regardless of what they are, more than any other archetype. So like Undertaker, I would play him in Zoo because he's a one mana 1/2, which is like good to begin with because he doesn't die to hero powers, and you don't have to play bad cards to enable him. So you're just playing like Harvest Golem and Loot Hoarder and stuff in your Zoo deck, and the 0/2 egg that you're probably playing anyway. So that's like where I would play him. But if you're making like a Death Rattle themed deck, it's probably not going to work out that well. It's going to look more like Pirates or something. I don't know, like the 1/7 guy. We'll get to him later, but.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think it's an efficient creature, and if you buff it once, it has insane stats, so I would just play it in Zoo.
Yeah, you buff it once, it's a 2/3 one mana drop. I mean, that's pretty awesome, right, to be honest. But Trump, it seemed like you disagreed with something Renaud said there.
Well, he's not quite wrong in that, like, if you release any cards which are, say, 4 mana cost or lower, and they're efficient, then yeah, stick them in Zoo. And that much is correct, that the majority of cards that are released... will Zoo can consider it more, or Warlock can consider it more, I should say. That the only benefit Zoo the most is a stretch, though, since you can release cards that are anti-Zoo and anti lots of guys.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just feel like, in general, I think that's the deck that's going to benefit most from, like, an arbitrarily large pool of cards, because the hero power is just so not okay. I'm pretty sure it's gonna get, I guarantee you, within a few months it's gonna get nerfed to like 3 damage to yourself. It has to like, I don't know what beats it anymore after the new set. It has, like, out of the 5 cards they've released, like, you've upgraded its one drops and you've taken away its weakness to AoE, and it's just, I don't know. I mean, yeah, you can build a deck that beats it, but once Unleash the Hounds is fixed or changed, if it is, then yeah, I don't know. I don't know what keeps it in check anymore.
Hmm. Okay, like, comments to that, Trump?
No, go ahead.
Any comments to that, Trump?
Huh. I think my comment is just better area of effect is necessary.
Yeah, an adjustment that in that regard. Yeah, I mean, one of the 25 other cards could be, you know, another AE spell, so yeah, I could kind of see that for sure. Okay, let's go on to the next card. We'll go to Shades of Noxramas. 3 mana drop, and you can kind of see what the strats are right here. Reynard, what do you think?
That's the stealth guy.
Yeah, this is kind of the miniature gruel that's
or sorry,
stealth.
Which
it's the stealth, it's, yeah, it's two, a 2/2. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I don't like it very much. At the first I saw it, and I'm like, oh my god, it's broken. And then I realized that, I mean, it loses stealth when you attack, right? So,
yeah.
It's a little I play with stealth outside of conceal. But yeah, it's, I don't think it's good because it's weak off the top. And even if you play it turn 3, you're not like immediately affecting the board, like something like Harvest Golem would.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the issue with that is, yeah, it's just like bad late game, and even if you play it turn 3, you're getting a lot of stats, but you're like spending your entire turn 3 not doing anything. The one deck where it's kind of an exception is something slow like Warrior. I could see it being good in, because it's you just kind of like play it turn 3 and then kill all their stuff, and just like you have this win condition that they can't interact with sitting in play, which is pretty cool. But it's just not as efficient stat wise as something like Shattered Sun Cleric or it's more for control decks, I think, than anything. I wouldn't play it in a mid-range deck because it's too slow to affect the board, and I wouldn't play it in an aggressive deck because it's too slow to affect the board.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that, too. Trump, what do you think?
Yeah, Reynard's absolutely right. Doesn't belong in an aggressive deck, doesn't belong in a mid-range deck. So, late-game control or combo deck, where you put it out and then you just, bam, Blessing Kings, Blessing of Might, Bless Champion.
Boom, exactly.
It's stealth, right?
Yeah. Oh, it's actually you can't buff stuff, right? Without revealing stealth.
Can you?
Yeah.
You can't buff
it? You can buff it.
You can, and it won't lose stealth?
No, it won't.
That's actually really interesting, then. I mean, yeah, it might be a thing.
It's still kind of slow, though. I mean, it's not like Gruul, where it's like each person's turn, it's plus one, right? Which just can get crazy really fast. So
they just can't interact with it at all. It'd yeah, be kind of sick. Oh, and you make a new deck just off of this guy. Like, play with Worgen Infiltrator, and this guy, just put a bunch of pants on him, attack for 20. Like,
yeah, that's that could true. Be good. I mean, that's true. I mean, like, Warsong Commander and something interesting like that. Yeah. Okay, let's go on to the next card. It's the Nerubian Egg, which is one of the cards that Zaria was tempted or given us previews of leading up to the announcement. What do you think of this, Trump?
My gosh, this card is ridiculous. That's my first reaction. In a world where Shield Bearer is good, the Nerubian Egg is king. Is all I can say.
That's true. Oh man. Okay, Reynad, what do you think?
I'll let Reynad extrapolate or build on that.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite cards spoiled out of all five. It's I think it's absolutely disgusting. Like, without any other cards being spoiled, Zoo right now already plays like 12 cards that buff creatures.
Yeah,
there's like Shattered Sun, Direwolf, Abusive, Dark Iron Dwarf. It's like so many cards that you're buffing. Like, basically, if you give it power, you can suicide it into their creature and then get your 4/4. Then, like, on top of that, you can Defender of Argus it and like suicide it or make them kill it. It's not even weak to silence because it's a 2-mana card. So like, if they would you Iron Beak Owl if you're a dragon and feel good about it? I mean, not really. It still wins in that exchange because your opponent put Iron Beak Owl in their deck on purpose. So it's like, there's no, it's good against AoE. This card is just absurd. This is the card I think that'll push Zoo over the top because you don't have to play mediocre stuff like Imani Berserker anymore. You just play like a real robust 2-drop.
Yeah.
It is kind of like, the drawback is it is kind of weak on turn 2 if you don't have a buff effect. But that's really rare.
Yeah, that's probably true. Definitely some classes, right? I mean, even if you had to, like, I don't know, smite it or something like that, that's not bad too, right? I mean, freaking 3 mana for a 4/4, that's pretty nice. So, yeah, this is essentially putting Death Rattle on any of your, like, on a Zoo deck, like you said, putting a 4/4 Death Rattle on any of your units, which is pretty awesome.
And it buffs Death Rattle Keeper. That guy. It's good with him.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Definitely. Yeah, I'm excited about this one, and it's kind of cool. I like the design of the card, too. It might be too powerful, but, I mean, at least the 4/4, but like the design of it. Okay, next up, Dancing Swords. Okay, so this card was nothing like what I thought it was going to be when I saw the picture. So, Reynad, what do you think?
Yeah, it's nothing like what I expected either. I mean, I think it's a bad Mokla. I wouldn't play it, but... Yeah, man, that's pretty much all. Like, some cards... Well, okay, it does have Death Rattle, which is interesting, so I guess if you're trying to enable the 1-2 guy, then this could be pretty solid, but I think in general it's a bad Mokla. Really? I'd rather play something like Harvest Golem almost every time.
Interesting. Okay. Trump, what do you think?
Yeah, pretty much agreed with that. Okay. It's different than Mokla, of course, since Mokla gives your opponent a benefit when it enters play, and then they actually have to deal with the Dancing Swords, which... is not guaranteed, especially if you play it on turn 3,
right.
But it seems tough to pull it off. It's a good design in that it's very efficient for 3 mana and comes with a drawback. I like cards that have that kind of style.
Yeah.
This one, it just seems tough to pull off as all.
A power level, what do you guys think of the a power level of a 4/4 3 mana drop, though? Is it worth that card?
I think no. It would have to have a slightly less... big drawback, maybe if it was just like a, I don't know, even if it was a 3/4 vanilla, that's honestly almost the same stats.
Mm-hmm.
And because the life really matters a lot more than the power.
Yeah.
And if it was a 3/4 with no drawback, I don't even know if I would play that over something like Shattered Sun Cleric. So I think it's just a little too low on the power curve to be good enough, but I mean, it's close. Maybe if it was like a 4/5.
Okay.
Trump, I was thinking about this 3-mana 3/4 vanilla thing, and I've come to the conclusion that most decks right now would run a 3-mana 3/4. I'm not going to print a 3-mana 3/4 vanilla, but it would be something. It would change things up, I'd say.
Yeah, I think so too. Okay, the last one that we can see is... This is a big one. I think this is the coolest card that they announced. Baron Riven, is it Rivendare or Rivendare? How do you pronounce that? I don't know the WoW lore that well, but anyways, there, Baron. Think. We'll just call it Baron for now. The new Baron. So this minion triggers a double death rattle. I mean, basically doubles any death rattle that's on the board. So for instance, Karen would trigger two Banes if he died while Baron was on the board. What do you think of this, Trump?
I mean, the gut reaction, everyone is like, oh my gosh, you get two Banes. Oh my gosh, if you put your ancestral...
oh my god, I didn't even think of that.
Ancestral spirit on your Cairn, then you get like four Banes or three Banes. I don't know the exact
number. Holy shit, yeah.
And then you've got like, oh my gosh, if you have Sylvanas, you steal two of their Banes. But I think that this is a... My reaction, after the initial hype, I think this is not actually that good. Okay. It can be... It's like one of those things where you have to force into a deck, and you know, obviously it relies on a lot more of the other set, see how good death rattles are. Mm-hmm. But the basic requirement is you need to have something with death rattle, and then for your opponent not to do anything to it, and then on your turn you play the Baron Riven there, and then you... have to lose your death rattle on that turn also.
Yeah.
For best efficiency. That's somewhat tough to pull off. We'll see.
Basically. Yeah, with the existence of this card, definitely people will be reacting to death rattle completely differently. I mean, just more urgency. There's going to be more urgency in maybe setting death rattles off before this card gets down type of thing. Raynaud, what do you think?
I mean, it's got... really good stats for a 4-drop, which is interesting. I mean, it's only slightly worse stats than Yeti. So the effect is all upside. I mean, my first reaction is it's terrible because you have to get two death rattles out of it to make it, like, above average. Because you want to play it on curve, right? So the death rattles you're getting probably aren't going to be, like, Blaine-level death rattles. You're probably getting, like, Harvest Golem or Loot Hoarder type stuff. But... I mean, the stats are really good, so I don't know. I mean, even if they silence it, it's still massive, so you can, like, they're still defender it. I don't know. I'd have to play with it, and I'd have to see what the death rattles are, but my first reaction is it was terrible, but now I think it's a little less bad. I think it might have potential just because the stats are really good. Like, worst-case scenario isn't that bad with this, because I'm still getting 8 mana of stats for 4 mana, or, yeah, 8 worth of stats for 4 mana, and, it's all towards the ass on the card, which is really important. So,
yeah, it's on the card. Yeah,
That's the technical term.
It feels a lot like a combo card for sure. You'd want to play it on the curve. I think I would play it later. I'd want to play it like later, like in the late game, would be more of an ideal situation than on turn four.
All the better death rattles are cheap. Golem, Loot Hoarder,
okay.
Leper Gnome. I don't know. Like, it's, I mean, yeah, there's Karen, but, like, most of the Death Rattle cards are cheap, right? Nerubian Egg.
Yeah, that's true.
You don't want to be playing this guy with the 4/4 for 3.
Yeah.
Or maybe you do. I don't know.
Yeah. Any last thoughts, Trump?
Nope. Just gotta see what those other Death Rattles do.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if they're going to release another 5 soon. Just, you know, a little preview of what's coming up. That'd be pretty cool.
I guess I do have something to say, actually.
Okay, sure.
I sometimes visit the Reddits and the Blizzard forums, and, like, this is the number one card that people have been talking about. Oh my gosh, this card's going to get nerfed. I guarantee you this is not going to make print as is. Wow. That's just silly. Like, it's very situational.
Yeah.
Maybe, like, if the other Death Rattles are amazing, but... it's tricky to play. You've played on turn 4, it's not great. You save it until late game, that's too combo-y. Blah.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's in the right place for what it does, I think.
Yeah. Well, so I didn't even get a chance to ask you, Trump, but overall, how do you think these cards affect Arena? Like, because we've been talking Constructed barely, and we've been talking about Zoodex and that sort of thing, but when it comes to Arena, do you think it's going to be incredibly impactful, some of these cards, or...
Well, breaking it down, let's see. I actually think all of the cards, well, the five cards here, none of them are good in Arena except the 2/2 stealth, which grows. Because in Ruby and Egg, you can't really activate Undertaker. You can't count on the Death Rattle. Yeah. Dancing Swords, is Death Rattle isn't abusable in Arena, and Baron Rivendare is probably difficult to build a Death Rattle deck in Arena.
Yeah, that's probably, it's very hard. Can't guarantee it, but okay. So, anyways, that's going to be some of the new cards are going to be coming out. As you can see, new game boards, lots of cool new things I'm looking forward to seeing in the next, hopefully, month and a half. Hopefully we'll see some more previews and that sort of thing. But, okay, let's move on. Let's talk about, I guess, the announcement today. So yesterday, iPad's available in the U.S. now, and today I saw in Reddit that it's supposed to be available in Europe, too. So it's covering a lot of the world right now, I think, with the launch for the iPad. And again, it's not the iPhone, it's just the iPad, not Android either. But looks like it's doing well. It was like number one in the U.S. yesterday, I believe. What do you guys think? Either you guys want to jump in, whatever.
It's like the first step for Hearthstone's complete and utter dominance in the world of esports. Like, what that's going to do for the casual market? You know how many people play Angry Birds? This blows out like every
Dude,
like
Candy
once it comes
Crush,
out,
man. Candy Crush. It's like
exactly, yeah. This is step one to the mobile release, and once that mobile release happens, that's gonna double or triple the player base, and that's all gonna trickle down into the competitive scene and all that, and it's gonna be really awesome, I think.
Yeah, Trump thoughts.
I'm not the best person to ask because this is my phone.
I know. So. I was going to say that.
Yeah.
I was like, if you have an iPad and you have that Razer phone, that Moto Razer phone pretty much, I was going to be shocked, but that's cool.
I actually have no idea how impactful it is. Like when they said it's the number one app, I was like, oh yeah, of course. It's a really good game. I was like, oh, okay. That doesn't surprise me. I don't know how big a deal it is, but apparently it's a big deal. So hooray.
Yeah, it's a big deal. Given that I make mobile games too. Being number one free app in the U.S. is a very, very big deal. So kudos to them for doing that. And I think you're right, Reynaud. It's going to be the beginning of world domination for Hearthstone. And I can't wait to just be able to, like, you know, just go to the gym, you know, and whatever, like in your treadmill or riding a bike, and you can play. I can play Hearthstone now, like while I'm doing that. So I can do two things at the same time that I would be wanting to do, which is really, really cool. So check that out, guys. Go and download it on the iOS App Store or iTunes App Store today. Check it out. Just search for Hearthstone. It's the best way to find it. Okay, so let's move on to our Hunter discussion. So we're going to get into the deck discussion, kind of what we discussion. So we're going to get into the deck discussion, kind of what we do every show now. And Hunter is the big talk again. It's been the big talk, I feel like, for the last season and a half now. But a new Hunter has been establishing itself on the ladder for the last few weeks, or the last 2 or 3 weeks. And it's more of a board control mid-game type of Hunter, not so much the aggro, crazy burst type of Hunter that we've been seeing, what we saw last season. So there's two variances of it. And one being Life Coach's deck, and one being Kalento's, or Gara's, if, you know, Reynaud wants to get really typical, really technical on that.
And they worked on it together.
Yeah, so let me get Russ on here. Yeah, so I figured we would just talk about each one of them, and kind of get your thoughts on what are the strengths of each one, the weaknesses of each one, and why they're just so powerful right now. So why don't I start with, we'll start with Life Coaches. Trump, why don't you start off? How much do you know about Life Coaches, Hunter deck?
I know secondhand about these decks because I play against them a lot.
Yeah.
So I suppose everyone knows why the Life Coach deck is good. The Kalento deck is slightly newer, so not everyone knows how good that is, but I think it's really good. But anyways, Life Coach's deck is not standard. I mean, things have changed really fast over the last week.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
When I say this is the standard, that wasn't the standard a month ago. This is the standard now, and you have the classic Eaglehorn Bow, which it's worth mentioning there's only one of now. Mm-hmm. And you have the traps, you play the bow, you hit the face, you play traps, they trigger the traps because they can't not trigger the traps. And then you don't have very many guys out, so the explosive trap is quite effective. Then when they have a lot of guys out, you play your combo wombo, you play the buzzard, you play the unleash, you play the doggy, or you play the hyena. Everything just goes in there. You draw a bunch of cards. Your hyena is like a, let's see, a 10-5,
yeah,
whatever.
Exactly. Something like that.
It's got some extra late game spice to it with the Houndmaster, which is a card that's always looked really good on paper to me, but hasn't seen play until about 1 to 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And that's like 8-7 of stats for 4, and it's 4-3, and then buff. Wait, no, 6-5 of stats for 4, and that's still really good. And part of the buff is charge mode because you're buffing a beast, so that's really good. And you've got Savannah Highmane, which is one of the most efficient minions in the game, a 10-9, quote unquote, in for 6.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
Yeah, and it's somewhat amazing that those two cards haven't been used until the last 2-ish weeks. But here they are now, and they're really good.
Okay. Reynad, what are your thoughts? And, I mean, I guess, again, you know, I'd kind of agree that this is kind of the standard that people are building off of, and maybe even, you know, Clinton, those guys built their decks off of. What do you think of this deck, and why do you think it's become so powerful?
Basically praise on the metagame a week ago. I'm just going to start off by saying, like, the Life Coach deck is outdated, and it was flawed to begin with, but only by about 4 cards. That's like how most good decks start, is there's like a slightly flawed version that gets fixed.
Yeah.
The traps and the bow are like the mistake there. And I mean, Leroy's, you can make an argument on either way. But basically what it does is it exposes you to flare in the mirror match, and they're very situational. So if you replace them with Crocolisk, your opening hands look a lot better, your Houndmasters are better. It's just like a much, much more streamlined deck. Stampeding Kodo is there to fill out the curve. Deadly Shot's there. I'm not sure why. I'd have to ask him, but that's like the one card that seems a little sketchy to me. But yeah, it's like for the most part, Kalento's deck is just a better version. But it's a strong deck because you kind of have to look back on the evolution of Hunter decks to kind of understand why. Like at first, there were these face rush decks, and the control decks weren't really streamlined yet, so they were just getting burned out, and the aggro decks are getting burned out, and after that the control decks kind of built themselves better to beat Hunter, and you started to see like those Hunter versus Warrior games where the Warrior would just hero power like 20 turns in a row and never play anything unless they could hero power as well. And basically the high main adaptation kind of got around that. It let you kind of go over the top of decks to try to slow play you like that. And yeah, I mean, that's basically where we are right now, is these Druid decks that try to play, like, not extend quickly onto the board to not lose to Unleashed Hounds end up losing to the High Main Houndmaster plan, and then if they try to race you, they lose to the Unleashed plan. And the high Legend rank ladder right now is in complete and utter turmoil. Like, nobody knows what they're doing at all. Everyone's just frustrated. Like, it's so frustrating because, the older Hunter decks would always have the Unleash combo, but this deck, it doesn't have as much card draw. So, like, you have to basically flip a coin on, am I going to play around Unleash, or am I going to play around, like, not Unleash? And it's two completely different lines of play that you have to take. And it's just like a gamble. Like, do they have Buzzard Unleash? Okay, I lose if you make one line of play. But, like, if you make the other play and they don't have it, you end up losing. So it's weird. It's just, nobody's really found a deck that, like, completely and utterly dominates it yet. But, usually what I do when a deck like this comes along is I just go back like a season.
A few seasons ago, and pick one of those decks. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the old Hunter deck just absolutely destroys this. I don't think it's remotely close. Same thing with like Burn Rogue. You can try that. High Ladder right now is so weird. There's a ton of people playing Tempo Rogue because that's like the consensus best deck against this.
I think so, just by the community. The Rogue seems to be somewhat the counter deck to this. Sap is pretty effective against things like
Sometimes.
Savannah Highmain and that sort of thing.
Yeah, if they don't draw Highmain, it's terrible though, so it's like really tough to... What if they draw Huffer? And I mean, it's like it's still good against Hyena and stuff. But yeah, I like Watcher Druid against this deck, actually. I think it's actually like 60-65% against it. Or kind of like you could try like Strifegrove's old deck with Pyromancers and like Azure Drakes, or those were two different decks. But both of those are good against this as well. But yeah, nothing like
an old version of Strife Rose deck.
Yeah, like Pyromancer, nothing like completely obliterates this 80-20 though, because any deck that would completely destroy it loses to the Unleash Plan. That's like the thing. At first, I turned to Zoo, which is positive against the deck, but I mean, sometimes they draw to Unleash the Hounds and you can't win. So like, it just depends on.
I was wondering about that today. I mean, I feel like Zoo is a huge favorite. I don't Trump. What do you think of that matchup?
Well, right now I am playing a lot of Zoo. And I haven't seen Glenta's deck. I mean, it's getting there, but 2 days ago, I didn't see any of Glenta's deck. Mm-hmm. And then 1 day ago, I started seeing some of Glenta's deck. I suspect when I play today, there's going to be a lot of Glenta-style Hunter decks today. How do I think it matches up? Like Rainon says, it's a lot about the Unleash the Hounds. And I think I've just started to accept I'm just going to play everything and not play around Unleash the Hounds, and I think that's the winning move. Even though it sucks and you look really silly when they unleash you for five and then draw five cards and then draw more with the doggies and the Timberwolves and the Hyenas, but you have to look silly because if you don't do it, you'll lose. So the matchup feels sort of dissatisfactory because you know that you're going to get wrecked if they have the card, but you play it anyways because you get wrecked if you don't play it that way.
Yeah, and that's not a healthy matchup, obviously. You know, that's not a very fun one whenever you run into it. But and more times than not, they don't have an Unleash, right? There's only two Unleashes in that deck. So I would think that the percentage would at least 60-40, Raynaud, do you think? Zoo?
I think it's about 60-40. Okay. Like, Zoo, it's only because, like, Zoo is favored if they don't, like, Zoo just wins if they don't draw Unleash, and if they draw one Unleash, Zoo is, like, a coin flip to win still.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it's, like, I don't know, it's so, usually they draw one Unleash. It's such a close matchup when that happens. The second Unleash, you're never beating. Two Unleash, like, Hunter wins automatically.
Yeah, I can see that.
The thing is, if they Buzzard combo the Unleash, they probably draw the second one. So it's, like, yeah, it's, really volatile matchup, really frustrating. That's why a lot of the higher rank players right now are very frustrated because, honestly, in my opinion, they're just trying to play decks that. The thing is, the metagame was stagnant for like 2 months, and they're just still trying to play that decks from that metagame to try to find the deck that beats this, and they're just not going to.
Yeah.
So they need to. Like, something new needs to come along. And, I mean, I have some ideas to try, but yeah, the deck is just strong right now. I tried playing it myself, and it's definitely not. Whenever a deck like this comes along that's like ahead of the metagame a bit by a week, and somebody always rides it to rank one, and then you can't imitate that because you're going to play against the mirror and you're going to play against the deck that counters it a lot.
That's right.
I played the 10 matches I played yesterday. I played against one Zoo deck, five mirrors, and four Tempo Rogues. Like, that's absurd. Like, clearly it's not the same metagame that this deck preyed on. I mean, metagame's like self-correcting. That's the thing. So
What's cool about it, man. I mean, that's what's cool about Hearthstone is it changes. So it's so dynamic. Exactly. It changes every week, every 2 weeks, like you're saying. The Life Coach deck, I think, is better against Sue overall, though, right? With the traps, the explosive trap is actually really great. Trap. Yeah. So
when half your mats the mirror, it's like you can't afford to get flared or you lose the game. So it's
Just for folks that aren't familiar with again Kalenta's these hunters deck, what are the best matchups for it? Like, what does it just crush really badly that, you know, used to be powerful? Trump.
Literally any deck from last month. Handlock, Druid, Warrior Control, anything. Like, Old Rogue without Cold Bloods and stuff, Miracle Rogue.
Yeah.
It beats everything that's, like, 3 weeks old, probably above 60% of the time.
Okay.
That's sort of a surprise because it used to be like, oh, man, they're a hunter. I'm going to bring this warrior deck. I'm going to crush them.
That's right.
Because I'm just going to armor up a lot, but that's no longer the case with this Kalento type of hunter. So,
I remember
it's just really solid across the board right now. And right now, it's the deck to beat. And not only do you want to beat this deck, you also want to beat Zoo. So, like I've said, you want to. The deck that will be the next big deck is going to be the deck that beats this deck and Zoo.
And Zoo. Wow, that's true.
And that's tough. Maybe impossible. But if you find it, then get to Legend 1 real fast.
Get to Legend 1 in 100 games. That's
I think it's honestly going to be as simple as changing like four cards in some older decks. I really think a lot. Like, I think a lot of decks have a lot of like potential to just come in and clean up right now. There's a lot of things I want to try today, but yeah, there's like three or four that I think it'll just take some testing. You know, it's only been a couple of days of this, so
people are trying to adapt. It's too early to make a an assessment of it. It's just kind of cool. It's just cool to see some Crocs again, because Crocs used to be like one of my favorite cards when the game, like the beta first came out, just with the Hunter, because that's all I played when it first came out, and it's cool to see a vanilla 2-3 back in the meta.
I forgot what class it was, but I got it to like level 58 or something, and I was so excited to see what golden card I got, and I got Crocolisk, and I was so upset. But now they're beautiful. I play them. Lose to the other guys, plebeian non-golden Crocolisk, because I'm bad at drawing Flare.
Bad at drawing Flare.
I hate this game.
I'd like to add that the River Crocolisk in gold mode looks absolutely glorious.
Yeah.
Really?
It's got like, it's got like little sparkly stuff going in.
Oh, really? Wow, okay. I'm going to have to check that out. I don't think I've seen that. Thoughts on Scavenging Hyena? Because I've had games where I've played against this deck, and then it's like Scavenging Hyena is just crazy, because I don't have any silence, or I don't have, it's to the point where I can't remove it, with like a Soulfire or anything like that either. What do you think of that card and just how much power it brings to it? Trump?
It combos really well with Unleash. I'm not okay. Actually sure what to say.
Yeah, sure. Renan?
It's big and stupid. I don't know. I don't like the card personally. I never liked it in Hunter because it seems really all in, and I can't play it turn two. So I like never know if I'm supposed to keep it or put it back. And like, I don't know. I mean, it's like honestly, I like Crocolisk because Crocolisk does what I want him to do. I play him turn two and he sits there. Yeah. And like Hyena, it's always I don't know what it is about the card. I just like never want to play it on any board state ever. But I mean, it's good enough. It's a bad buzzard. That's what it's there for. It's good against Zoo if you draw Unleash, so.
I mean, you pretty much have to play it with Unleash, too, right? That card is not... Well, I mean, sometimes you can play it with, like, a Boar and Animal Companion and, maybe buff it once or twice, but for the most part, always goes with Unleash. Okay.
Speaking of cards to keep in your hand, like, as a big Hunter noob, Raynad, do you think that Buzzard should be kept in hand?
It depends on the matchup.
Oh, the mulligan?
Yeah. If you're playing against something like Warrior, where they're not going to have a lot of dudes, or like Druid, where they usually play around the Buzzard combo, then I put it back. But if it's against something like Zoo, or the Mirror, well, not in the Mirror match, I wouldn't keep it either. I usually actually don't keep it, I guess. If I'm against Zoo or Shaman, I'll keep it. Decks that are going to flood the board, basically. Decks that will lose to the Unleash combo, but a lot of times I put it back, because at the higher ranks, people aggressively play around Unleash combo. So you, like, never draw more than two cards with it. I don't know. It's, like, a card you kind of have to have in your deck, but I actually found myself putting it back more often than not. If I was playing in, like, ranks, 1 through, like, 10, though, I would keep it 100% of the time.
Okay. That's definitely good advice. And, let's see, any other card that's worth discussing in this deck? Not really. You did mention Deadly Shot, right? Deadly Shot is an interesting choice, but I would assume it's because of some single giant taunt or some type of card that you can just remove easily.
Yeah, I mean, it's a filler card that's good along the curve and has a lot of applications. It's like the Deadly Shot, the Mukla, the Kodo are replaceable, and the Iron Beak Owl. But, yeah, like... Since more people are gravitating towards Kalento's list, then like all of a sudden Flare is becoming bad again. Not bad, but like you can cut it for stuff if you want.
Yeah.
Even though it's greedy. So I don't know. It's just
at least one. You can cut at least one, right? I mean, two of them is pretty overkill.
Then people start playing traps again, so you need more flares, and it's like,
right.
We'll see.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I tried a lot of different. Yesterday.
Go ahead. Try.
Oh, just speaking of the one ofs, I've recently found a love for putting one of a card in a deck, just because a lot of the times when you draw two of the same card, you're like, I don't have any options, and sometimes both of the cards are bad, and just having the singletons, especially on Hunter, might be a good idea because of the tracking, and like every once in a while you hit that card you need, and when you don't, you just toss them away with tracking, so it's a slight synergy thing also.
It's true. There's a lot of different things to try. Yesterday I was on ladder and I tried playing the 3-mana 2/3 guy that makes a pig. Because the pig is a beast. So I played like 2 of him and 2 Defender of Argus to enable him, sort of. So you'd have like 4 Houndmasters instead of 2. But that was like too clunky. Because this deck doesn't act, it's not good enough at keeping creatures early on board. So like Defender wasn't working well.
Yeah.
And the pig thing wasn't as good as Mukla in general.
The Razorfin. He's talking about the Razorfin, guys.
Yeah. And I was trying like the Raptor, the 3/2 for 2, just kind of like a bad Crocolisk. Because maybe you want a third one. I don't know what the right number of 2 drops is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, I mean, there's a lot of things to try with the deck, a lot of ways to go with it.
Okay. Well, that's great. So Hunter, guys, I mean, got to learn how to counter it or try to figure out a counter. Like Trump said, the magic formula right now is countering Zoo and countering this Hunter deck. You'll be in a great spot if you can do that. So, oh, it says Druid discussion. Oh, crap. What the hell? Uh-oh. I think I lost those guys. Hold on a second. What happened? Uh-oh. Let me see. Let me see what's going on here, guys. Let me go to a quick break. I'll be right back. All right, so we're back. Sorry about that, guys. Had some issues with a server I use. But, yeah, I think, I don't know, I think that kind of concludes the Hunter discussion. We didn't really have that much more to say to it. But why don't we go into some Q&A, viewer Q&A with you guys, and we'll just go over to the Reddit thread and ask some of the questions that you guys have posted. Again, I'm just going to sort by top, and whatever comes up is what I'm going to ask here. So here we go. We'll go into the thread, and we'll take some sub questions too. So we'll kind of alternate sub question, and then something from Reddit. So give me 1 second. Okay, here we go. Akoto asks, "What do you feel Life Coach's mid range hunter exploded on the ladder? Why do you feel that Life Coach's mid range hunter exploded on the ladder, where the burn cycle hunters were so prevalent, almost nullifying that style, even if the common cycle counters it pretty hard?" So I guess, yeah. So, yeah. I guess the question is why do you think that it's the upgrades happen, I guess, with the Hunter deck?
The cycle deck was really good, but it did not beat Warrior or Druid. So, I mean, the new deck does. That's, like, the big thing. Mm-hmm. But another thing is that the cycle Hunter deck wasn't actually ever that common. It was, even after I played the deck on stream a lot, people preferred to play the like Animal Companion one and stuff. Nobody ever really had, very few people adopted Argent Squire, like Loot Hoarder, like the whole, like the first thing that Garo was playing in EU. So you saw more Animal Companion and Arcane Golem and stuff on NA, and that's like the big reason. If people were playing Cycle Hunter, I think like the Life Coach deck would have a lot harder time adapting because I think Cycle destroys it. But you know,
okay.
It's like the new deck is just better too. It's just better matchups. It's better in the hard matchups.
Yeah, Trump. Any comments on that?
A simple answer. Kalento posted. I know the question is on Life Coach, but I actually want to say Kalento instead really popularized them because he hit rank 1 North America and Europe very recently, and it's been publicized and
in 140 games.
Exactly.
Wow.
Big props to him.
That's awesome.
A great example of a good player leading a new deck, and that's the way to sort of break everything.
Yeah, exactly. And then posting on Reddit, of course. Larwood asks, okay, so a subscriber question. Does the fact that Deadly Shot is viable mean that there could be still room for Tink Master? Is Tink Master relevant in any way or in any of these decks? Right, not?
It just gives them something to Houndmaster. I don't know. probably not. It's a sketchy card. Like I play it in Zoo occasionally as like another shattered sun player, but
Oh yeah, that is a beast. I forgot about that. That is extra. That could be extra bad. Trump, Tinkmaster.
I hadn't actually considered Tinkmaster in Zoo. That's a pretty good idea, or a pretty cool idea. Maybe not a good idea. And the thing about Deadly Shot versus Tinkmaster is when you're playing this version of Hunter, you'll usually have minions on the board, which you may or may not want Tinkmastered.
Okay. Let's see. Stabstone asks, is that MC Tech Baron Geddon Deathwing really good against Zoo for some time as a ramp druid?
Okay, if you're playing ramp druid, one starfall is usually enough, but you can't, like, I think the first Baron, like, Baron Geddon's better than the second starfall, and yeah, they're good against Zoo, but I think if you're playing ramp druid, you just kind of got to give up on this. Just, I don't think it's beatable, honestly, if you're playing ramp druid. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really, really tough. Trump, thoughts?
Well, you've listed two cards that are good against Zoo, MC Tech and Baron Geddon. Deathwing is not good against Zoo, though. But if you wanted to, I mean, I don't think you should ever just say, oh, okay, I give up this matchup, because that's where innovation comes in. It's like, where would Kaleno be if he was like, oh, I'm playing a Hunter, I'm just going to give up against Warrior? No, he said, no, I'm not going to lose to your stupid War. I'm going to play this River Croclisk. I'm going to Houndmaster. I'm going to beat your face in. So, innovation, yeah.
Innovation, that's right, that's right.
But yeah, that's good direction to look. Like, if you wanted to crush Zoo, MC Tech's a good place to look at, and Baron Geddon, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, MC Tech, I've used it a few times too. Definitely great. Great against Zoo. I'm going to switch. Let's see. I'll give subs one last time. I'm going to go back to the Reddit and we'll ask one question, then come back to subs. If there's no more questions, then we'll flip off after that. Let's see. Blizzard said, so the Arch or the Arc asks, Blizzard said that they plan on handling future nerfs with new cards to change the meta, with each class getting a new class card in Noxramas. What are some cards you'd like to see for each class to patch these glaring weaknesses of the current meta? Would you like to see neutral cards to counter specific strategies, a reverse knife juggler to counter UTH or neutral flare? Well, we kind of talk about this a lot, but anything after seeing some of the new cards, any thoughts?
I hope the spells are cool. All I've really seen is creatures. I hope Priest and Mage get a buff, because Mage was one of my favorite classes for a very long time, and I just miss playing it. Yeah. It's just exceptionally mediocre right now. So I hope they give it some good cards. And yeah, Warlock and Hunter don't need much more.
Yeah. Trump?
Yeah, I mean, a good way of doing it is just buffing the classes that seem underrepresented in the current meta by putting in good cards for those classes and, like, not giving as much love as the others for the others. That's all.
All right,
so or specifically countering cards like the Arch suggested, such as the Reverse Knife Juggler.
Oh, I love the Reverse Knife Juggler. That's really cool. All right, Unleashing the Hounds here. Subscriber mode off. Should be subscriber mode off here. Yeah, there we go. Subscriber mode off. Okay, so we continue with the Reddit questions here. Balthazar asks, what do you think is the main thing keeping Paladin from being a top pick? Trump.
I'd say it's their lack of early game.
Yeah, I think so too.
A lot of the Paladin cards get a lot better when you have just one minion on the board will make a lot of your cards better. Like, then you can Argent Protector it, you can Blessing of Kings it. But the trick is getting that one minion on the board. So the game starts as early as turn one, especially with all this Zoo now. Mm-hmm. And you usually pass turn one where you play like Noble Sacrifice or something, and then turn two you don't really have anything secure. So it's too slow out of the gates, I guess, is the main problem.
Reynard?
I think the thing that stops Paladin from being a popular deck is the same thing that stops any deck from being played, which is the other classes just do what it tries to do better. Like, there's two ways to build Paladin. You can build it as an aggressive deck or as a control deck. And the aggressive deck is inconsistent because it relies on drawing Divine Favor, so it's just worse than Zoo. Also, its creatures are just worse than Zoo. And its hero power is just worse than Zoo. And then if you build it controlling, it's generally a bad warrior control deck or a bad druid deck. Like, you can choose which class you want to be a bad version of, and that's basically what Paladin is right now. I agree with Trump. I think it just needs, like, a good 2-drop so that you can play Argent Protector more lively. That's probably what I would give it. Maybe like a 2-3 for 2 that... I don't know. gains you. Maybe if he comes into the zone bubble or something. Maybe it's too good.
Yeah, I mean, I think I generally agree with you. I've been playing a lot of Paladin lately just to, you know, just to try it out and how it does against Zoo and the Hunter and that sort of thing. And I've had some success with it. I mean, my thoughts are kind of similar to Trump's. I think, you know, those first three turns are so hard with the Paladin. I mean, a lot of times I'm playing the control Paladin for the most part, so it's a lot of the combats are based on that. Most of the time I'm throwing out an Earth and Farseer without healing anything, right? And or you're sitting there on an Aldor and you can't do anything with it. So it's pretty much like hero powering twice, you know, in the first three turns, which isn't very strong against most things. Really bad against even classes like Hunter, right, that can benefit from your 1-1 guy being on the board. So a 2-drop would be really, really nice. That's not one of the neutral ones right now, I think. But Paladin's not that far off. I mean, it's arguably one of the best classes that can clear the board. You know, Equality is one of the... I mean, you've got two Equalities. Usually you have four things that go with Equalities to clear the board. And it clears anything, right? It clears Giants or it clears, you know, Zoo units. So it's got a lot of great, great elements that some of the other classes don't have. And it's got one of the best weapons too in the True Silver, so it's close. I think it's really close. But aggro wise, I think there's just so many better options. Pretty tough. Let's see. Next up, we got Quixtal. Any suggestions on climbing the ladder between rank 5 and legend specifically? Each of you guys are experts of this, so Reynald, let you go first.
Yeah, just like pay attention to patterns and play the deck that, like, I mean, usually there's a pattern for a day, like a huge amount of the field is playing Druid or something.
Yeah.
You just want to switch to a deck that counters that. And yeah, I mean, don't stick with it for like 5 or 6 games at least. I wouldn't just switch every game you lose. That's a pretty bad habit to get into. But
yeah,
just like pay attention to what other people are playing and try to beat it and make sure you understand your own deck. The important thing is just play a lot of games too.
Trump?
The thing about playing like 6 games to get a feel for a pattern is I feel like that's somewhat flawed. I mean, to some extent it's not, but you yourself see a very small sample of what's actually going on. I think more importantly is, and that's why rank 5 to 1 is hard as opposed to say like rank 10 to 5 or something. You need to sharpen play and just try to make the most out of everything. There's something called the invisible play where you wouldn't see it if you weren't better. Like there's a play where you can save a health on something or do an extra damage to the opponent. And like, if you're just overlooking it, it's easy to overlook, but if you really pay attention, hunker down, you might be able to do that extra 1 damage, save that 1 health, draw an extra card or something. Mm-hmm. Don't play a card to die. That's the small edges that make you win games.
Yeah. I'd also throw into that between rank 5 and legend, the majority of the decks that you'll see is going to be a lot different than what you've kind of been playing up to that point. So be ready to adjust and, you know, maybe even play a different style just moving forward after that. Let's see. Next up, we got Pink Punky Blue. I am interested in meta. But know a little about it. Can you explain why? Can you explain why it's difficult to craft a single deck that beats both the Zoo and the Hunter deck right now? We kind of talked about the magic, you know, the magic deck being that, but why is it so hard, I guess?
Everything has to have a weakness. If there was a deck that beat everything, then people would just be complaining about that instead. So, I think Druid is positive against both, like Watcher Druid, so you can start there, but... Yeah, that's just why it's difficult, is because you're trying to beat 2 different decks with 2 different plans. They're weak to 2 different things, basically.
Trump, yeah, like digging into maybe more of the details as to what's strong with them and why it's hard. Any comments on that? On why it's so hard to build a deck that does well against both?
I sort of missed the question. Could you repeat it?
Oh, just the question's about crafting. Why is it so hard to craft a single deck that beats both the it says Warlocks and Hunters, but in particular, I think it's like the Zoo and Hunter, kind of like what we were talking about earlier. What elements of both, you know, make it kind of difficult? Or, you know, maybe there's some conflicting elements, right, that it's weak against. Each of those classes are weak against that. It's so difficult to build a deck that's versatile enough to beat it.
Yeah, okay. I guess I've said this a lot on stream, but the reason why it's difficult to beat both of them is because they play differently. Like, if the question is, can I build a deck that can beat Hunter, or a question, or can I build a deck that can beat Warlock, Zoo, the answer is absolutely. But to beat both of them is tough because they come at you at different angles. So, if...
Uh-oh, we lost Trump there.
No.
Right when he was getting deep into his, like, explanation, too. Damn it. Okay, there he is. He's back. Trump, you back?
Oh, did I completely? How much of that was...
Maybe the last 20
they
seconds.
They come from different angles.
Yeah, come from two different angles. You're just getting the meat, getting into the meat of it there. Start your video real quick. There we go.
Okay, they come at two different angles, which is why it's difficult to beat both. But like Rain had suggested, Ancient Watcher Druid might be a good place to start your search.
Okay. Let's see. All right, RS, we're going to take like maybe two more. RS Word of Wind, he asks, currently Mage is considered to be the strongest class in Arena, yet it's being one of the weakest in Constructed. Any ideas how this can be balanced?
I said in the Reddit AMA thing that I did yesterday that I think 3-mana Polymorph would be one place to start. Just like a slight buff they could give it that would give it a pretty strong, unique effect. But it probably needs a little more than that even. I don't know. It's so close. It just needs a little bit of something. I don't know what that has to be, though, besides the Polymorph thing.
Mm-hmm. Trump?
I think there's a bigger overarching issue with it, which is that there are so many mage class cards that are bad. And yeah. I'm going to say bad in quotes because, like, for a time, the Freeze Mage deck ran a lot of the cards that I considered bad, like Frost Nova, Cone of Cold, Ice Block, Ice Barrier to some extent. But they're bad cards, and they have no synergy with each other, and... Like, there's some synergy in that you play the Kirin Tor Mage, and you play Secret for free, and then you play the Ethereal Arcanist, but that's really sketchy. So there are just so many cards that are, like, on their own, not good. Ethereal Arcanist, which is not mage cards, but might as well be. All the Secrets, the Icelands, the Frost Nova is just the mirror image, kind of. To an extent, there's so many cards that aren't good enough. Like,
there are some super good cards, and then there are a lot of bad cards, I guess is what you're saying. That's fair to say.
Mm-hmm.
Reynaud, you're about to say something?
Yeah, I wish they'd revert the nerfs to all the freeze cards, because
yeah,
I thought they literally gave their ladder, they gave it 3 days before they nerfed it. Like, it got popular on Wreckful Stream, like the old Blizzard Frost Nova Giant Mage deck. Yeah. That deck was really cool. And people were already beating it on ladder at high ranks after 3 days. But just because it got really popular, Blizzard had this knee-jerk reaction and they nerfed like 4 cards. And now that's like a really cool archetype that just isn't in the game anymore. Like, I've tried playing it after the nerfs. It's really bad.
Yeah.
If they just like reverted those nerfs, gave us 2-mana Frost Nova, 5-mana Blizzard, all that stuff again. And I think that's fine. It doesn't have Pyroblast anymore either. So that alone should balance it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think the 5-mana Blizzard, I think, is totally... I mean, I don't see why they don't do that, because Blizzard right now is completely worthless, even if it was decent, you know, with the freeze mechanic, because it's at 6, and you have Flamestrike at 7, so why would you, you know, put both of them in your deck, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of also the Arena test, too. Like, Blizzard, like, almost all Area of Effect is good in Arena, but Blizzard's, like, one card that costs even too much, even for Arena. It's like,
yeah,
if it's
that's true.
That much there, then... Yeah, it could be 5, and yeah.
Yeah, maybe keep Nova at 3, and then like Cone and Blizzard back to what it was. I think would be fine. I think that'd be pretty good. Yeah, I loved it too. I loved that archetype too. I mean, was it unfun? Yeah, maybe it was unfun, but at the higher levels, I felt like it was this added dynamic that we just don't have anymore. And it's a mechanic, a freeze mechanic, that's just completely gone from the game. And I know they won it in the game. Otherwise, there wouldn't be cards that would do it. Like, even, like, the Frost Elemental, right? It's never used either. So, they definitely want want the freeze mechanic somewhere. Okay, fake SE2. What do you guys think about Swiss format? I know, Reynard, you've had a lot of MTG experience, so what do you think about the Swiss format for non-invitational tournaments in Hearthstone? The Swiss format has been used a lot in MTG tournaments because it reduces the influence of RNG by giving each player more games to play, so why not use it here as well, and do you think Hearthstone needs more big open tournaments in general?
I absolutely do, and that Swiss format is being implemented. From what I understand, it's being used at DreamHack. They're using that. It's like 7 rounds, and they're also using it at the like the EU versus China like 2P.com thing that's coming up. That thing with the $11,000 prize pool.
Yeah.
They're both using that Swiss format, I think. And I think it's going to kind of become the standard. I mean, there's other ways to do it, but if you're trying to have a tournament with like 128 players or something, I think it's like the only system I know of, at least, that works. One thing that is important, though, I think, if you're going to have a 7-round tournament, you can't make it best of one, because sometimes you just get Unleash the Hounds, and you shouldn't be eliminated from top 8 contention, because it's dogs. Like, it's not okay. Yeah. So I think it should be best of 3 in Swiss, and I mean, that would still have you have like 40, 50-minute rounds, just like in Magic, which is fine.
Yeah. Trump, what do you think of Swiss? For those of you, let me explain Swiss a little bit. So for those of you that don't know Swiss, it's not like it's a non-elimination type of tournament format. So it's not single elimination, not double elimination. It's closer to what you would see in something like a group format where, you know, you play X number of matches. Like, Swiss can be variable, too, as to what the rules are. But for the most part, you play X number of matches. And then based on, you know, your record or a point system or that sort of thing, you know, it kind of determines who kind of moves on to, you know, more of a traditional bracket, that sort of thing. So, Trump, what are your thoughts on Swiss?
I think in an ideal world, Swiss would just be the format, but it takes a long time is all.
It does, yeah.
So there's just pros and cons to every single format. The pro of Swiss is that it's probably the way to best tell who's the best, especially if you make best of 3 Swiss, but the con of it is that it takes a major amount of time. So in order to not take that amount of time, you sometimes have to compromise the system to make it quicker. That's all.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good. And you're going to see it at DreamHack, like Reynard said. DreamHack, you know, from the SC2, you know, just scene that I've been following for a long time and part of, they've come up with a really good system where it's like 2 rounds of groups, you know, so that, you know, the very first, let's say 128, right, you'll have all those, what is it, 32 groups of 4, and then, you know, based on the top 2 of those groups, they move on to another round of groups, and then from there they move into, I think, a bracket of 16 or something like that. So I think we'll probably see the same thing at DreamHack Bucharest, and yeah, I agree. It's a really good system. It's probably the best one that I know of right now in any of the large tournaments. And I guess to finish off this guy's question, what do you think about open tournaments?
Why Trump? Not?
Yeah. That's true. Trump, what do you think?
Of course.
Or okay, so here, no, yeah, I mean, it's an obvious question. How about this? Why do you think there has been so many invitationals versus open tournaments to this point? Trump.
To this point, it's been more... There's been a mix of both, I think. It's just that it's... I mean, stating the obvious, if you invite people who are popular, then your tournament gets more views.
Right.
And there have also been more open tournaments, and I think more recently there have been more open tournaments, so that's great. I think there should always be a mix of both, and perhaps there should be a mix of both in the same tournament, where you do both, basically.
Right.
You have some amount of open, you have some amount of invites, etc. You can have a lot of different ways to do it.
Yeah. I think NESL, I kind of like how NESL does it right now with their King of the Hill thing, because they invite one challenger on, and then one person is the winner of an open tournament, and then there's the reigning king. And those, like, the 3 players that they broadcast in the stream. But it's... I mean, yeah... I agree with Trump. It's good to have a mix of both. I think that if you want to play open tournaments, there's tons of them that you can play in right now. And if invitationals bring in the numbers, and that's like the thing, that, like, the people with in esports, like with the money to like pay for a high production tournament right now, like they're using like Hearthstone's popularity as a way to just like raise brand awareness. And I mean, that's good. Like that's what a company is supposed to do. And I mean, that's why, just like Trump said, you invite the popular players, you get more views. It's just it's a very like pragmatic approach. So I mean, yeah, there's a mix of both, and there should be a mix of both. But I think that the what it's really missing right now is like some sort of big open type of system, because right now if you're playing for like $90 and or like a Razer mouse, it's not really worth 9 hours of your life to play a tournament for that. So like there needs to be some sort of like actual open tournament like worth playing, you know, something.
Oh my
that
gosh, I got some good news. Okay. Got some good news, Renan. We have the biggest open tournament field that's just recently been announced. It's the Blizzard Ladder, where they've said that the top 16-ish, I believe, every season get invited to some big tournament. And I think that's a really good system.
It is, yeah. It's like
that is the biggest open tournament possible. That is true, Trump. That is absolutely true. It's a kind of Swiss system, too, I guess you could say.
Yeah. It'd be nice to not, like, wait 12 months for the event, though.
Yeah,
you know?
It's like a year. I mentioned that to some of
Kind of like maybe like a W. I don't know enough about StarCraft, but WCS sort of, something like that, maybe. Or
it has seasons, right? In WCS, they have like these three seasons that lead up to the BlizzCon, which is the World Championship or something, you know, that sort of thing. So, I think it'd be nice to have little checkpoints, like you said, to keep us going, right? Instead of us just like, oh man, just really grinding through. What is it, 7 months, 6 months until BlizzCon? And then
that much is true. That is a very long haul, but that general basis is a good start.
Yeah. And, you know, just, I guess to follow up your point, Reynaud, DreamHack Bucharest is pretty much that tournament you're talking about, right? It's going to be the first big one that's open, and should be a great time to see a lot of the good players and a lot of the players that are not known but are very, very good too. Maybe somebody makes a name for themselves, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I love the format they have there. I really, really want to do well on that one.
Yeah. Oh, so you're going. And Trump, are you going to Bucharest?
Oh, it's too far away.
Okay. Too much traveling for the Trumpster. okay, but I think that's going to be it for the questions today, guys. So thanks for finding in a bunch of questions. I wish I could have gotten to all of them, but unfortunately we don't have time for it. But we'll continue doing it. We'll always take Reddit questions, guys, no matter if we have sub-questions or not. And I think today kind of went well. And keep upvoting them. Just keep upvoting them and posting them. But let's wrap up the show. Pleasure having you on again, Reynaud. It's a good time. It's always really good discussions with you, man. But you want to do some shout-outs, thank yous, at this point?
Thanks to HyperX, Phoenix, iBuyPower, all my sponsors. Thanks to all my fans. I mean, everyone watching, you guys are awesome. And, hopefully Gara and I both do well in Bucharest. Hopefully you guys will watch that and cheer us on. I think it's going to be broadcast, right?
For sure. It's DreamHack. So, for those of you not in the esports scene, StarCraft 2 or, you know, any of that kind of scene, DreamHack's a big event. So, like, really big event. Should be great stage for Hearthstone. Any update on the team? Actually, I didn't even get a chance to ask you, Reynaud. Everybody knows you're forming a team, and mm-hmm. any update on it?
Yes. I announced the main roster. I'm trying to organize a tournament for the first time, which I'm very bad at because it's my first time. But basically, that's going to coincide with like the website launch and all that. And it's the four of us right now, Rekful, Tides of Time, me, and Gara. We're going to start being at all these big events like DreamHack, ideally. Right now, I can only afford to fly out Gara because he's nearby. He's in Germany right now. So so it'll just be me and Gara there, not Rekful and Tides. But hopefully if the website and all that takes off, you know, this will be like the first salaried Hearthstone team. And you can start seeing us at all these big events and stuff. And yeah, looking at like content that these guys make on the website and I'll make for the website. So
yeah. Man. Exciting, man. Big news. I mean, some big things coming up then.
Yeah, definitely. I don't want to like say too much before it's all actually
announcement of an announcement, dude.
Exactly.
It's common in esports. All right, great, man. Trump, want to do some shout outs, thank yous?
Yeah, sure. Shout out to DreamHack Bucharest. Way to represent the Hearthstone. Create some good tournaments. Let's see. And shout out to Kalenta, whose decks we talked about today.
Yeah.
Big props to him on achieving rank 1 legend. USAU, very impressive. And I hear right now he's taking on Asia also for the triple rank 1 legend action.
Triple crown. Nice. Has anybody done that before? Anybody had the triple crown, number 1 rank in all the servers?
No. It's been like NA and EU a couple times, but...
Yeah. It's hard to get it all in, you know? You only have 30 days, so...
Yeah. Asia's also very... I mean, the amount of zoo on Asia is like... My God.
My God. Right, right. Okay. Trump, any more? Any more shout-outs?
No.
Okay. I'll round things out by big thanks to you guys. Again, Raynaud for coming on, Trump for doing this with me each and every week, you guys for watching, Kalanto too for letting us check out his deck, as well as Life Coaches. And tune in next week, guys. We're going to have a developer, maybe Eric Dodds, maybe Ben, I'm not sure which one, but we're going to have him for an hour, so get ready for some good questions. It's not going to be these super quick Blizzard interviews that we've had in the past. We'll get a chance to maybe dig into some discussion. And so tune in next Thursday, same time, same place for Value Town. Check these guys out on Twitter, or all of us out at ChamMV, at TrumpFC, and at Andre Kanuk, right?
Yanuk.
Sorry, why Yanuk?
Just search Raynaud. It'll come up.
Like a Canadian or something. Yeah, search for Raynaud. I think it comes up now. And of course, these guys stream. They're like the top streamers. So twitch.tv/Trump. Is it TrumpFC? It's TrumpFC, right? The Twitch? Yep. And twitch.tv/Raynaud27. Why is it got 27 on it? Is there already a Raynaud out there?
There was 3 years ago when I made the account. And I mean, I can switch it because I'm partnered to Raynaud. But if I do that, then anyone that has it bookmarked can't go to it. So like,
I'm sure they'll find it, Raynaud. I'm sure they'll find it. Okay. Yeah, true. But okay, yeah, go ahead and find us there. And then you can check out the VODs for Value Town. This one will be posted shortly after, youtube.com/ChamManB, and I'll tweet it and all that good stuff. You guys will hopefully find it. But okay, that's going to be it for Value Town this week. So for Trump, Raynaud, and ChamManB, we'll see you next time. Later.